So today, I'd like to welcome to the show a guest by the name of Bruce Odell. Bruce Odell is the vice president of a nonprofit group, U.S. Count Votes. He's a self-employed information technology consultant based in Minneapolis with more than 20 years' experience in the financial services industry. And Bruce currently specializes in e-commerce security for large Fortune 100 companies. Bruce Odell, welcome to Civil Discourse.
It's nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us today. First of all, if you could just explain very briefly to the listeners what exactly does U.S. Count Votes do and your relationship to that group?
Well, U.S. Count Votes was an organization that was formed in the aftermath of the November election, and it's a volunteer scientific research project with a group of mathematicians, statisticians, and computer scientists who came together in the aftermath of the 2004 election, with the large number of anecdotal reports of irregularities and the well-publicized controversy about the leaked exit polls, in order to apply statistical and mathematical techniques that are well known to help understand and focus investigative effort on where vote counting problems may be occurring in the U.S.
Great. And this is obviously a nonpartisan collection of volunteers?
Oh, that's right. We're certainly nonpartisan, and we're interested in doing something that has never been done before. There's never been a group that's brought together detailed precinct-level vote total information from across the U.S. and correlated that information with census demographic information, the type of voting equipment in use, and so on, to build kind of a detailed nationwide picture of exactly what happens in the U.S. when votes are counted and cast.
And so this database will provide those with an ability to kind of immediately notice any flags. Is that correct? Is that the purpose of the database then?
Well, we're actually in the process. We've designed our database, and we're working with the volunteer programmers and data collection volunteers to actually go out and gather the raw data and input it into our database in a form that'll be usable, apples to apples kind of comparison. There's literally hundreds, if not thousands, of different formats for publishing vote results, which is one reason why nobody's ever done this before.
Right.
And so we're going to study, we're going to identify or analyze what happened in not just the 2004 election, but potentially in previous elections from the perspective of kind of data mining. We want to just analyze objectively the votes that were cast and see if we can identify anomalies or patterns, which we have actually already been able to do with the limited data we've been able to gather so far. A case in point, in the state of New Mexico, we can talk about.
Right.
And also, our statisticians have analyzed the recent report from the exit pollsters, Edison and Matovsky. They released a report in January explaining why their exit polls conducted on election night indicated that John Kerry actually won the election with a majority of the popular vote and 319 electoral votes. But of course, as we all know, when the actual results were counted, the election turned out quite differently.
Right. Well, I want to have a couple questions. Let's just kind of backtrack for a second. Exit polls, how reliable are they?
Well, I was going to say, surprisingly, exit polls over the last 50 years have developed quite a remarkably accurate reputation. In fact, in the U.S., between 1990 and 2000, there was only one major race where exit polls did not accurately predict the outcome. In 2004, of course, we're all aware of the fact of the anomaly in Florida. And, of course, in 2004, there were remarkable widespread inaccuracies in the exit polls. One of our statisticians computed there's a chance of about 1 in 100 million that the exit polls in all of the battleground states would have been off as much as they were, and all in a direction favoring a single candidate.
I've heard continual reports that speak directly to that. I want to have one question. I believe that with the 2004 elections, there was a change in how the exit polls were conducted, and in fact, all the different news media outlets pulled their resources. And have they made this data even available to the public?
Well, Edison and Matovsky released summary information, but they haven't released the raw precinct level information, which would be, I think, would be absolutely essential to figuring out, you know, what went wrong with their exit polls. I mean, let's take a step back. In fact, the Bush administration funded exit polls in Ukraine in November to make sure that the elections there were not fraudulent. And in Ukraine, when thousands of reports, anecdotal reports, popped up of irregularities and exit poll discrepancies favored one candidate, the immediate conclusion that people both in Ukraine and internationally drew was the election had been stolen. When the similar scenario happened in the U.S., it was apparently unimaginable for people to think, you know, we've been brought up to think that and to assume we're the world's oldest democracy, and we must, by definition, as a vote must be counted accurately here. And so some people assume that it was the exit polls that were wrong, and that U.S. count votes were saying, we're not assuming anything. We want to gather the data we need to do a scientific study on the accuracy of vote counting to see what really happened.
Right. Now, perhaps let's just move this onto the issue of how exactly votes are cast and counted. You know, we all know the history that voting fraud and tampering is nothing new in America. Boss Tweed, there's allegations that Johnson was actually won the governorship of Texas. Kennedy might have stuffed some boxes and had some help in Chicago. So this goes across the party lines. But with the advent of technological advances and electronic machines now used to cast ballots, do you, as a statistician, your work, do you have an opinion on to what are the new vulnerabilities, and is this a more accurate way to count votes, or does this open a whole new can of worms of abuse and fraud?
Well, I'm not a statistician. I'm a computer security guy, and let me tell you, from a computer security perspective, not only am I, you know, appalled by the lack of controls around not just the voting equipment, which has well documented vulnerabilities, but also around the counting procedures themselves. In fact, there is no state in the United States that counts votes anywhere near as carefully as your corner bank counts dollars, and you know that's simply intolerable. In fact, with unauditable electronic voting equipment that's used, you know, doesn't generate a paper trail that the voter can verify. For that type of equipment, you're basically taking it on trust that your vote is being recorded accurately. And in fact, Florida uses that equipment, and they prohibit legally recounting any of their direct recording electronic touchscreen devices because they say, by definition, the vote must be accurate. And in computer security terms, that's just an appalling breach of security, and in fact, generally accepted practices. And last year, 95% of computer scientists polled by the world's oldest and largest computer society agreed that it was, or disagreed with use of or deployment of unauditable electronic voting equipment. But still, they're widely deployed around the U.S. And it's really a question not just of having a paper trail. It's also absolutely essential that you actually go out and do a random audit of a significant number of precincts, mm-hmm. and actually compare the paper to what either the electronic touchscreen device said, or even optical scan equipment. Optical scan equipment is programmed by the same companies that program touchscreen equipment, and you just simply can't trust anybody. It's not prudent to trust any private organization to count votes without having the actual count be audited systematically, in the same way that every bank in America every day audits its books down to the penny. And they do that not because it's a good thing to do, it's an expensive thing to do, but they do it because the world is full of embezzlers, and right. Banks know that. And to say that there is no such thing as an embezzler in the electronic voting world, I think is self-delusive.
Right.
You're just kidding yourself.
Well, let me ask you a question then. Do you have an opinion? Here in New York State, Albany is deciding right now how they plan to spend federal funds that are being allocated by HAVA, and this would be for purchasing new equipment. Previous equipment has lasted. I mean, we've used the same equipment for 30 years. So whatever is chosen is going to have, you know, ramifications for the next two or three decades. What would your advice be in regards to upgrading equipment based on your experience and your work in computer security then?
Well, I would recommend, regardless of what technology you look at something that generates a voter verifiable paper trail. In mm-hmm. other words, the voter has to see, there has to be a paper record that the voter can see that records what their ballot is being cast electronically. And in the case of an optical scan system like we use in Minnesota, you have the actual paper ballot with, you know, exceptions for people that are visually impaired and so on that have a we'll take care of. But you have to have voter verifiable paper regardless of what equipment you're actually buying. It's best not to have the paper under glass systems that are similar to the ones used in New Mexico, for example, when it just turns out that that's incredibly expensive to recount, and there's a concern that because the votes or the paper occurs in the order that voters come in to vote, that you could actually infer how people voted if you carefully looked at the logs. So I would recommend any system that has a paper trail that the voter can verify, but also make sure that you ask for a random audit protocol. Make sure that a certain number percentage of precincts are actually randomly audited on election night. Mm-hmm. With standard paper control procedures in place, and if you spot discrepancies, no matter how small, I think that they are, you know, that you have to be willing to have the state subsidize a recount in the jurisdiction where discrepancies occur. I look at it as voting systems are like national defense systems. They're mm-hmm. not even like banking systems. If you lose control of the voting system, it's the same as if you're invaded and occupied by a foreign power. You lose control of your own destiny.
Right.
So since voting systems are national security systems, let's think about it. I mean, computer science in the 21st century, we're modeling the human genome, we're modeling the physics of black holes. I think we should be able to produce a 100% accurate counting application where basically what we're doing is starting with zero, reliably and accurately increment a number by one.
Right.
It should be possible to produce error-free counting applications that are audited, honestly audited, and accurately audited to ensure no party or group of people can manipulate the official vote count.
Right. Well, I like that analogy, and you only stress the importance of how being vigilant on ensuring that we do have free and fair elections is, and the fact that so many people who are questioning and analyzing the results in an effort to improve them are still labeled, in a way I can't believe, unpatriotic, anti-American, whatever the whole shrill debate unfolds. One final question, Bruce. We used statistics, we used number games in economics, and they are trusted heavily. Cost-effective analyses, these are the tools that are used by economists when they want to, you know, discard environmental regulations or whatnot. So I have a question. In the field, and those you've worked with, I know that you're not a statistician, but you've obviously been working closely, the group that you're involved with, U.S. Count Votes, as many of them. Is this just a small fringe of people who say that something went wrong, or is this near total consensus that whatever happened November 3rd, whether it was a mistake in the exit polling or in the vote, something terribly went wrong?
I think generally in the more people know and are familiar with statistics and polling techniques, mm-hmm. the more worried they are, and it's not a group of fringe academics. We're talking about people from Notre Dame. We're talking about distinguished fellows from the University of Wisconsin that helped, set up statistical quality assurance programs. We're talking about people from, Temple University. In fact, some of these folks might not even be raising these issues in the absence of tenure. Nobody likes to really think about seriously. It's very scary to think about the possibility that vote counting may have systematic problems in the U.S. because we're just not brought up to think that, and it's right. A very scary thing to contemplate. But no, this is I think we'll see. In fact, we're about to issue a updated report analysis of the exit poll problems reported by Edison and Matosky. And I think you'll see, last time we had a group of, I think, 9 academics representing different institutions. I think you'll see a much broader group of individuals signing off on our updated report.
Great. And where will that be available? Will that be available on your website?
Yeah, that'll be available on our website. We're going through the final, kind of the final edit process. We would expect to have that out within this month, within a week or so. And you can see it at our website at www.uscountvotes.org.
Bruce, thank you so much for taking time out to speak with us today, and I wish you the best of luck, and I hope that the database is available for 2006, because it certainly supplements the great tradition here in America to maintain our democratic principles. Thanks again, Bruce, for joining us.
Thank you.
Take care. We're just going to take a short 45-second break. I'll be back with some final words. And if any callers or listeners would like to call in, please feel free. The number here is 607-777-2137. If you're just joining us, I'm your host, Tarek Abdelazim. This is Civil Discourse, WHRW 90.5 FM. We just had a very interesting conversation with Bruce O'Dell, Vice President of the nonprofit group U.S. Count Votes. This interview and the show will be archived on my website, as have previous shows. That's www.modocpress.com. That's one word, modocpress.com. And I encourage you to please go listen for free. You can download it and listen at your convenience. Now, someone might find it odd, and I'm just going to wing this here, folks. Someone might find it odd that that's a conversation we had here, and we're just about entering April here. But as I stated earlier, one, we have some very important legislation facing Albany right now. And if you go to, let's just look at this for a second. The New York Times editorial March 9th stated that optical scan voting is the most reliable and cost-effective of the current technologies. As it finalizes voting machine legislation, Albany should ignore lobbyists for high-priced voting machines and come out strongly for optical scan machines. And this is an issue that Albany has been debating for a year and a half now. Last year, they had 5 joint sessions, and they couldn't come to agreement as to how exactly they would spend HAVA funds. Now, there's $220 million available to the state of New York to purchase equipment to upgrade the lever machines. Now, here's a problem. If we were to use the touchscreen machines, not only have we heard that they are extremely vulnerable to vote tampering and abuse, but the ongoing maintenance costs of these machines are incredibly high. They have to be kept stored in climate-controlled rooms. You have to constantly do upgrades with the data and security checks. And guess what? The funds for those ongoing costs are going to be the new burden of districts themselves. So local taxpayers who have already been burdened by huge fiscal crises across the state will now be asked to take up the burden of ongoing maintenance costs of these machines. Now, you can bet that the manufacturers of these machines have been waging an intense lobbying campaign on Albany, spending millions of dollars, as they know this is a $220 million cash cow fund that is available to them. And then the continued ongoing maintenance cost will just be constant change in their purse. What we need to do, if anything, it's not just a paper verifiable trail, it's to consider optical scanning machines, or even recommended by some vote in and election integrity groups, that is to just do hand counts. But here's the group, where'sthepaper.org, New Yorkers for Verified Voting, blackboxvoting.org, League of Women Voters, New Democratic Majority, Alliance for Democracy, newspapers across this state are all coming out to say, choose the optical scanners and ignore the high-priced lobbyists that are trying to purchase democracy here and inevitably jeopardize it. So it's very important to continue this discussion, but I think it's also important in the context of what's going on right now in the Middle East. I've been hit by quite a few people recently with the question, how do you continue to protest this war when it seems like Bush was right? When it seems like what he's done over there is actually making great changes. And I'll concede, I will definitely concede that Iraqis may be better off. That's not something I'm going to debate. But I think there's something more at issue here, okay? If you yield your protest right now, basically what you're doing is sending Congress and our leaders a signal. You can lie and terrify us. You can bankrupt our children's futures. You can exact vengeance on the crimes of 9/11, on those who didn't commit it or have anything to do with it. You can wage unilateral wars, and you can continue a militaristic imperial plan, so long as a few million get to stuff ballots in a box. That's not a deal I'm ready to make. The means should be far more expressive of the ends. Needless to say, there's another issue that concerns me here. And to look at this issue solely is just, well, now they have democracy. Democracy is on the march. Freedom's on the march. Is to wholly miss how Iraq is part of a larger geopolitical strategy. We had to remember that Vietnam also played this role. It was one isolated phenomenon in a grand geopolitical strategy dictated by the morality play of domino theory and containment. Well, the war in Iraq is not an isolated phenomenon. The troops aren't coming home. The bases aren't ending. This is part of a grand geopolitical strategy that we've mentioned briefly here before by neoconservatives who explained this in great detail before they were in the Bush administration at the Project for the New American Century. There have been bases built in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Uzbekistan, in Turkmenistan, in Kyrgyzstan, in Azerbaijan, in Qatar, in Kuwait, in Iraq, all since September 11th, all under the auspices of war on terrorism. That's not it. It's not it at all. You have to understand that our Defense Department plans 30-year plans, and right now their 30-year national security plans entail lasers in space, a ring of military bases around China, and total domination of the oil resources so they can sabotage and tame any economic challenge that might rise from Russia, China, or the European Union. Now, this is not conspiracy. This is in their plans. So this war in Iraq is just the beginning, folks. This is a militarism. This is a very dangerous and reckless policy that is bankrupting our moral capital in the world, that is endangering our security at home because of the inflamed dissent that we are inflaming throughout the world. And I will continue to protest this administration's reckless policies, regardless if I see a few people cheering on the streets. I have been arguing, and many of the people in the peace community and the social justice community have been arguing for democracy in the Middle East for the last 20, 50 years. But we have done everything in our power to subdue it and deny it. What I'd like to do now is just sign off here with a few things. We've had a month long of anti-war activities and educational outreach that will culminate March 19th, a global day of protest on the second anniversary of the war in Iraq. Again, there are going to be events scheduled throughout the world, and we encourage members of the community to come down to the federal courthouse at 10 a.m. This is this Saturday on March 19th. The rally will feature local musicians, speeches by community leaders, at 12 noon. There will be a march that winds through downtown, and we will end indoors at the First Congregational Church on the corner of Main and Front Streets. After our short assembly, which there will be pizza and refreshments, we will return to the Federal Courthouse for afternoon of poetry, music, and peace vigil. So I please encourage all the community members who still have reservations, who are sick of the costs of this war, and who want to stop this 20-30-year plan of militarism before it gets far too late. What we're listening to here when we sign off on the radio show is an original track by Great Stone Sound System, artists out of Arizona, Doc Rock, and Cipriano. The title of the track is Syria Is Next. Again, I hope to see you here next week. This is Tariq Abdalazim, signing off.